Do you love the movies? Do you miss going to the video store, acid wash jeans, and MTV with music? I know we do. Welcome to Mike and Anthony's Soda Pop Culture Club. Me, Mike, along with my co-host, Anthony.
Is it Mr. Cocksucker now?
bring our take on a classic movie every Monday, or maybe Tuesdays now, pardon me, from the 80s, 90s, and beyond, during which we will play the game and open up a six-pack of favorite scenes. We also point out a couple of generic scenes as well. And at the end of the show, we'll rate the movies 1 to 24 cans. One can is whatever happened to that apartment when Daryl Hannah got her hands on it. And 24 cans is whatever was happening to Bud at the beginning of that movie when that chick walked out. I was like,
seriously. You want to talk about a damn cliffhanger?
We were dangling right there. But before we get to all that, we just want to let you know something. There's a lot of things we've already told you in the past, but here's the one thing we want to let you know. Just make us some movie suggestions. And the number one way right now we're going to push is through one thing. And Anthony's going to tell you what it is.
Apple Podcasts. Leave us a review. Let us know what movie you want us to do.
Yeah, in the comment. Like, when you review the movie, say, I love Mike and Anthony, or I hate Mike and Anthony, but I'd really like to hear them talk about blah, blah.
That's blah, it. Blah. Yes.
But if there's a movie blah, blah, I guess we'd do it.
You can even put blah, blah in the review.
And there's all those other ways we suggested in the past, so if you want to know what those are, go back, listen to it, all that. Also, we do have our website. I do want to say that, sodapopcultureclub.com. Go there, check it out. Buy something, make Anthony happy.
Yes, thank you.
Maybe. That doesn't make him happy. Buy him something. I think that makes him happy because I think he has his eye on things. And, you know, how it gets.
I do some window shopping on the website for sure.
Yes, on the window shopping.
There's some nice stuff there.
We are the window, you know. Okay, so you ready for the trailer?
Fuck yes.
All right.
From the director of Platoon, the next battle is in the greatest jungle of them all, Wall Street.
We're going down a drain, okay? The stock is plummeting.
When it hits 18, buy it all.
Something big is going down. I want you to fill out the missing picture.
Mr. Gecko, that's not exactly what I do.
Where you can trade your honor.
I could lose my license. That's inside information.
For power.
If you're not inside, you are outside. I want you with me, buddy.
I'm with you, Gordon.
Trade your peace of mind.
Just the beginning, pal.
If any trouble does arise, you are on your own. The trail does stop with you.
For a piece of the action.
$100 million, buddy.
All it takes is a little inside information.
I don't care where or how you get it. I think you owe me.
And you can trade everything you believe in.
He's using you, kid, but you're too blind to see it.
For everything you've ever wanted.
I get a strange call from the SEC, so this is heavy, bud.
Why do you need to wreck this company? Because it's wreckable, all right?
Michael Douglas, Charlie Sheen, Daryl Hannah, Martin Sheen, an Oliver Stone film, Wall Street.
Oh, God. The beginning of that is fucking great. From the director of Platoon, the White Collar Crime Massacre.
You're
comparing it to Platoon? What the fuck?
Now it's time to play the game. And you know what the game is. You know what the game is, right?
Three fake reviews, one real one. Anthony has to guess.
I'm going
to
read you three movie reviews. Two of them are fake, or two of them are real. One of them is fake. And Anthony has to guess which one. You two can play along.
Did I say two real or two fake?
Doesn't matter.
Whatever.
There's two real ones and one fake one.
I fucking pick one. I just go A, B, or C and pick it, and then he tells me if it's right or wrong. So basically, this is complete random chance. I don't even fucking pay attention.
Okay, are you ready to not pay attention?
Yes. I'm going to stop paying attention now, though.
All right. Joe Banks, The New Yorker. Oliver Stone fulfills yuppie dreams while managing to show the perils of greed. Gary Brown, Houston Community Newspaper. The definitive look at the corrupt side of American business. Kevin Carr, 7M Pictures. A compelling drama that is exceedingly well acted, with the obvious exception of the wretched Daryl Hannah. There you go.
I'm going to tell you right now. I'm going to go reverse here. Number three is one you wrote.
And if I told you were wrong, what would be your second choice?
Hold on. What am I guessing now? I'm guessing the right one or the wrong one?
You're guessing.
Or no, not the one you. I'm sorry. Not the one you wrote. I didn't mean that.
See, now you just cheated me into telling you.
No, I'm not. The first one is the fake one.
How do you know?
Funny, because we were just talking about You've Got Mail, first of all, which was a perfect segue into that, to Joe versus Volcano. But No, the third one.
Oh, okay. I was like, but that's not have to do with the other thing.
The third one I would have fucking guessed, though, if I was just listening to the reviews, since you said the wretched Daryl Hannah.
So that was Joe Banks. I didn't know whether you get the Joe versus the volcano
that was
thing.
Well done.
I didn't know if you knew his last name.
Joey B.
I didn't know you knew his last name. But yeah, that's a fake one. Although, I feel it would have been a good review at the time. While managing to show the perils of greed, you know? It's a good one. It's a good one. All right.
It was. Now let's get into this shit.
Okay. Well, get your numbers and then we're going to go into that stuff.
Oh my gosh.
Give the stats.
All right. Let's stat it up. Here is the official breakdown by the numbers, directed by Oliver Stone and starring Michael Douglas, Charlie Sheen, Daryl Hannah, Martin Sheen, Hal Holbrook, Terrence Stamp, James Spader, and John C. McGinley. Wall Street was released on December 11th, 1987, taking in $43.8 million at the box office against a $16.5 million budget. It scores 7.3 out of 10 on IMDb and 79% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yes. Now, the reason we're doing this is because I wanted to feature some great directors here and there. And we hadn't done an Oliver Stone movie up to this point. And this is pretty much the one I picked. I mean, we could have picked Platoon. There's some other ones. I know there's one that he done that you and I both love. But it was not very lauded. That was Any Given Sunday.
Yeah.
That was his attempt at that. But, you know, he did, he's not really done a lot of movies that are in our wheelhouse, I would say. I mean, Natural Born Killers is close,
mm-hmm.
but it's a little more, like, his movies are a little more serious usual. I mean, usually, and this is no different, but it's more 80s serious. I don't know how to put, you know, the cocaine era is a little different than everything else out there. You know what I mean? So this is a little different. So that's why I picked that.
It captured 80s yuppieism very well.
I feel, you know, yeah, you know, you feel in this movie watching it that Bud Fox and Tom Cruise's character from Cocktail passed each other on the street and drank. Maybe Bud Fox went to the bar that he was doing all the flair and serving drinks with the Tom.
It could have been in the same universe. You're right.
Yeah. I feel that's the same universe. And a few years later in that universe, or actually the same year, isn't it? A year later, you know, Josh Baskin goes to the city and becomes a vice president of the toy company and has sex with a much older woman in his man body. I mean, and that I feel this whole universe happened together.
It is very like he's got his own John Hughes thing going on.
But he didn't make all those movies. That's the weird part. Like it's
but it's incorporated with that because that all stems from this.
Yeah. I would say that, yeah, it's all, it's a weird mashup of 80s, just 80s. That's all I mean. It's a very interesting time for movies where you could, you know, and we didn't have universes back then, but I'm telling you, I feel it. I do. I feel that. So this movie, do you remember it when it came out?
Not when it came out per se, because, you know, I was 9 and
yeah.
You know, stocks weren't really my thing at the time.
Neither they weren't mine, but I remember the movie because I was about 14.
I remember about it, like, you know, that it was a movie as I got like in my teens. But
yeah, I remember because, you know, I was 14. So I was about at that time where I was starting to watch things and understand them, right? Like, you know.
Yeah.
And I kind of understood some of the things that were going on there. But I'll say watching it again more recently even. I did not. I thought I understood. I didn't know.
Nothing's changed.
Yeah.
You understand
but nothing's changed.
Same level now that you did when you were 14.
Well, no. I do understand a lot more about it and what was going on here. But I will say that the movie, when it comes to themes, this is one of the best aged movies from the 80s that I can think of. When it comes to the theme and happens,
because
especially
this is,
they made the sequel, but
being what it revolves around, Wall Street, like, the principles don't change with that. You know, it's like when we talk about movies that are based on like technology or, you know, something like that, you're screwed.
Yeah, like, you are.
The only thing that doesn't age in this, obviously, is that he's talking on the beach on a Zach Morris fucking cell phone and shit like that.
Yeah.
Daryl Hannah
is the tech of the age.
Daryl Hannah is fucking gluing foil to his fucking ceiling for Art Deco shit. That stuff doesn't age well, but the principle.
Okay.
Around it does.
You know what? We're going to sit and reminisce here for a second. But, you know, because you said that, I'm going to come right out of the gate. And I'm going to go with two things. I'm going to say two things. I'm going to go with the six-pack first. And it's because we talked about the yuppie thing in his apartment. What was that sushi thing that he was making the rice rolls with?
A little rice former?
Yeah, that thing is my six-pack. But a part of that I also wanted to put in the whole crappy nature of that apartment. I'm calling it a six-pack because it's so spectacularly bad, it's entertaining.
Yes, I was going to say, not just the sushi thing, but also she had like the Ronco pasta maker too.
Yeah.
Turning out noodles, just grab them as you go.
It's like they stayed up late and every time someone said, but wait, there's more, they bought something.
But it was great. I was like, so like, what? You know what? It was fucking, oh my God.
Sharper Image?
No, it was Edward Norton in Fight Club.
Oh, yeah. They're on the flights and buying the shit out of the Sky Mall.
Everything, the insomnia. No, the great thing, like that right there. I mean, first you've got work-related yuppies, you know, Wall Street, all this. But then you see that apartment and then all this shit that you have to have the sushi rice maker. You have to be sipping wine as you're getting spaghetti off the pasta maker.
Oh, yeah.
While you're getting the Haagen-Dazs out of the fridge and putting it in the microwave.
Is this a yuppie? Is it with, you know, when we grew up, we kind of knew what yuppies were. We kind of knew by watching and we had a feel for it, right? And is this like the yuppie handbook? Did people watch this go and like, man, I wish I was Bud Fox?
Well, fuck yes, you did. Everybody wanted that life.
Everybody wanted that. Oh, man. I mean, now you watch it and you're like, oh, my gosh, this is so tragic. You're like, I don't want that. I don't want that at all.
I still want the pasta maker.
Well, pasta's cool. Yeah. And a glass of wine. So you were yuppie.
No, remember, it's not spaghetti. It's pasta now. It's pasta now, man.
Oh, yeah. It's not spaghetti. It's pasta. Yeah. No, it's spaghetti, man. It's spaghetti. There's a difference between pasta and spaghetti to me. Spaghetti is something you can get for 2 cents every day, it feels like. Pasta, if it's made right, it's different. You know.
Pasta.
Pasta's different. Pasta. Pasta.
Pasta.
If you're in United Kingdom, is that what they say?
That's what you want in the
80s. If you're from the UK, let us know. Comment. You know, send us an email or something.
See, that was us in the 80s. They pasta. Had the fancy shit, you know. We had a bowl of pasta and a can of Shasta. That's how we did in the 80s.
Wow. Shasta. You know, that's funny you say that. I remember when I was a kid growing up, I'd go to family get-togethers in Indiana with my stepmother and my father. And that was the drink they got every time because it was cheap. And they would buy flats of Shasta and leave it out for everyone to have.
Yep.
So, like, whatever. I didn't like it as much, but yeah, you know, you make do.
You are a sugar connoisseur, so I can understand. Yeah.
Not as much as you think anymore. But I will say that one of the things that is interesting is that they did have the sushi scene in there because I know we saw it in Breakfast Club, her eating sushi for lunch, but I always felt like it was still that thing that was far off in the distance. Like, that's nothing ever. Until probably the early 2000s, it didn't feel like sushi was in our world, or where we are, until then. Like, that's like, you know, 15 years later.
But then now, like, everybody can get sushi everywhere, you get the fucking grocery store. Sushi has become it's kind of become the same thing as charcuterie boards.
Oh, yeah, charcuterie, that's the same thing.
Everybody's fucking making charcuterie for every damn event party.
Which I just want to say fuck those things in this sense.
Oh, you can't say fuck those things, because every time you come over, you're like, you better have a charcuterie plate for me.
I'm just going to say, I say that word now because that's what we've used. But before, we didn't call it that, and we just had some crackers and some meat on a plate.
We called it.
It's fancier now. We've used the yuppie ideal of what it is.
We've called it a fucking snack plate.
Yeah, we call our cheese and crackers or whatever the fuck you want to call it, whatever. Sure. It was plate.
I'm going to make a platter.
A platter, that's it.
A platter.
Of meats of cheeses, you know. That's what you heard.
And now it's a charcuterie.
With a
be fucking fancy about
special
it.
Knife and a board.
With a board that I have to rub with fucking mineral oil.
Yeah. And Bud would have done it because his yuppie ass would have done it, because he was definitely definitely good at that. I have some questions to ask about this movie. First, what I want to ask is, Martin Sheen, Charlie's father, being in the movie, did you like that? I like that touch. Did you like it?
He's an awesome actor, so I like him in everything, especially anything that he's in with Michael Douglas.
Yeah.
Did I like it? Yes and no.
And why is that?
I liked that he was in it, but I'm like, there were just some scenes that I'm just like, you are actually father and son, talk about him and Charlie Sheen, and you don't act well as father and son in this movie in scenes.
I think that's, you know, it might have been intentional, because
then it didn't work.
Because they didn't get along in the movie as father and son that much.
Right.
Like, he always had felt separated from his father in a way, because they weren't alike.
I'm not talking about tension between them. I'm saying I didn't buy it.
Oh, you didn't? See, I did. Yes. I bought it. I bought a hook, line, sinker. Because if you close your eyes, there are times when one or the other would speak, because they have such a similar voice pattern sometimes.
Yeah,
you could tell who was on the screen.
I get that. What I'm saying is, and I think a lot of it actually comes down more to Charlie Sheen than me. Like,
yeah,
I'm going to personally say, this is not, to me, one of Charlie Sheen's best roles.
Oh, it's not, what's his best one? Which one? Was he in Platoon? No, which one was he in? He
Full
was
Metal
in a
Jacket?
Casualties of War? Which one was he in?
Was it Full Metal Jacket or shit?
He was in a really good one. I thought that was his.
It was Platoon.
Now you're going to make me look. Hold on. Platoon. Yeah, he was in Platoon. Yeah. He was in Platoon. He was in that. I mean, so he was really good in that.
I'm just saying,
Young,
like,
Guns, he was in that as well.
He's definitely been in some great films and been really good in them. I wasn't totally digging him in this.
What about Men at Work?
Oh my God. What about it?
I love that movie with him and Emilio Estevez.
Yeah.
I have we may do this movie someday, but the one thing I will have to say that I quote forever until the end of time is, never fuck with another man's fries. I always say that. Just gonna say it.
True story.
I just had to say it, because it's like, that's what he makes me think of, is that particular scene in there. But that's one of his better roles, I think, personally, where he's a phrenologist.
I can tell you, in Ferris Bueller, he was better than he is in Wall Street, and he was only in that for 2.5 minutes.
Yeah, I get it. Ferris Bueller, he did a lot with very little in Ferris Bueller.
Yeah.
Like, he was able to carry, you know, all the scenes with Jennifer Grey pretty much in that, and it, like, very well.
Part of it could just be that because they're father and son, maybe it was tougher to do, because you might be trying to overthink it. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I liked it, so I don't know. We saw it differently.
It's an entertaining movie. There's a lot of stuff I like in it, but that's just something I'm like, it didn't hit for me.
That's, you know, all. We were talking about misses. I want to talk about my biggest miss of the movie. And I think you know what it... What do you think, if you were to guess?
You make
what
that fucking French girl in the beginning. You get whole body shot, and then never seen again. Never seen again. Like, I'm watching the rest of the movie, like, where's she at?
Why? Yeah, well, my biggest thing was Daryl Hannah was awful. So that's my generic.
Yeah, I did not care for her character in that film at all.
I mean, I'm thinking about it, though. Is there a movie where she just knocks it out? Where I go, this is a great movie, and she's a part of why it's great.
Splash.
See, I still think she's a horrible actress in that, but...
No, I like her in Splash.
Let's see. To me, Roxanne.
Yeah.
That's probably... And Grumpy Old Men. That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Well, if you don't like her, then, I mean, I would say Splash should be top of your list, because you're acting like you're not human.
That's true.
I would have to say that in this movie too.
The inhuman nature of her lends itself to that. But I think Tom Hanks does a lot in that movie. Carries it, because he's Tom Hanks.
I think part of her problem in this film in particular is because you just don't like her character, because you don't like anything that character represents. You don't like the fucking yuppie lifestyle and atmosphere.
See, I was trying to get to... Okay, that's the crux of what I wanted to talk about. Is I'm watching this movie, and like I said, the theme ages well. We're talking about corporate greed and people at the top making a lot of money off of tearing other people apart. That's what it is. However, when we watched this, I had to ask myself at one point later on in the movie, and it was when Bud and her were having the argument where he's like, we'll make do, we'll survive, because he was going to get out of the gecko lifestyle. And she's like, no, fuck
you. Get out of the gecko.
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, at that point, I said, is there a good guy in this movie? Is there one good person in this movie? And I know there's only one answer. There Marvin. Is one.
Marvin.
The father.
No, Marvin.
We talk about Marvin.
Who is one of my six packs.
Marvin is not a good guy. He's still awesome. A dick.
He's fucking
He's awesome. Still shilling stocks to people over the phone, cold calling, trying, you know, he still does a job that is hated and we don't want.
Gave his boy a C note just to help him out.
I mean,
offered him nicks and chicks. He's a good guy.
Marvin is the closest thing to good in the financial world. There's only one good guy in this movie, and you know who it is. It's his dad. It's the only good guy in this movie. Everyone else is shitty. Does something shitty for a living, does something shitty to other people. You know, even Lou, you know, the guy he goes to all the time, still is a stockbroker and still looks out for himself more than he does his clients, because he's talking about the good ones are the ones who can go through the bear markets, you know, and survive to be there for the bull markets, you know, all that shit. Yeah. Like, you could tell that these people, they're all about their commissions and building up their portfolios. They don't give a shit about nobody.
Right.
So there are no good guys in this movie. They're all bad guys. I mean, Gord Gekko, obviously, but what makes it worse, and I don't think there are, my thought that everyone's bad in this movie is a bad thing. It's that there are people out there who revere these bad characters. Like, people who would worship at the feet of Gordon Gekko, that character, the way he is right there in that movie.
Yeah.
There are people who would try to model themselves after that and go out and make millions.
No shit.
And that's the saddest part, really.
There's tons of people like that. There always will be.
Well, I'm just saying. And the fact that there was a sequel made. Do you know the sequel?
Yeah, Money Never Sleeps.
Did you ever watch it?
Yep, a couple times.
Yeah. I mean, and we kind of, what's really funny and why it ages so well, right, the first one, it's because the way they aged into Gordon Gekko being like a hedge fund guy. Like, he's what these billionaires do now. They go out and they play with other people's money and trade it back and forth to boost it up, and their bank accounts get fatter while everyone else kind of loses, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He's still on top even after all that. Even after all that. That's what's sad. That's what makes this movie so sad.
What white collar crimes are all about.
Yeah.
That's the dream. It's the fucking dream.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. You know, I'll tell you, white collar crime. I don't know if you're following it all. Do you know in Ohio here, we have the former speaker of the House of Representatives for Ohio, Larry Householder. You know who I'm talking about? He's on trial, right? And they've shown all this evidence where he got paid millions by special interest for the power energy sector. And they put a bill through and it got signed into law. And that bill that heavily favors them people that he paid $1 million is there. But now he's going to go to jail for putting it through. But the people who wanted to benefit still get to benefit. How does that happen? Just like this movie, like the people who broke the law still benefit and make millions. It's crazy.
Money fixes everything.
Greed. You know what? The best line in the movie, right?
Greed is good.
Greed is good. And I'm going to just say that right now, six pack Michael Douglas, right? He is this movie to me.
Yeah, no doubt.
Greed is good. In that trailer, why did you do it? Because it's wreckable. It's like he's an animal that has an instinct. And he just does. Like, he doesn't, it's not personal to him. It isn't personal until you tell him he can't do it.
It's not personal until he loses money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's when it gets personal. Like, it's personal at that point. But before that, when he's just doing it, it's like done. You know, it's like, I'm a shark and you're a seal and I'm going to eat you. That's how it is. That's
just, you're not even a seal. You're a goddamn minnow.
Yeah. Matter of fact, I'm just going to whip you with my tail on the way by as I eat up the rest of the ocean. Because he is, greed is good, man. Greed is good. Did you like his speech, greed is good?
Oh, yeah. Kidding me?
Could you see some of the logic in it, though? That's the sad
part. Yes, absolutely.
You know, when people want to make money, they'll do what they can to keep making that money. You know, they'll make this better so it makes money.
It's because you can spin anything.
Yeah, that's right. That's true. But in the end, what people, you know, idealism is great, right? Like, we love having great ideals. Well, if we do this, then everybody benefits because, you know, all ships rise in the high tide. But ultimately, a guy like that, he's looking out for himself. He's going to, at that point, he's saying, greed's good, and whatever it takes to make money and makes this place money, I'm going to do. But in the end, he'll sell it all into pieces. If it makes him a lot of money, he has less of a headache.
Yep.
Yeah. You know,
exactly.
That's just how it is.
Get the fleas off the dog.
Get that fleas off the dog. Was Bud good at his job? I mean, was he really objectively good?
You mean at his actual job?
Yeah.
Insider trading shit.
No, the actual job. I'm talking about what him and John C. McGinley were doing there, Marvin.
I don't know, because we never really. We never even got into that too. All we knew is that because he wasn't even doing it that long. It's like 2 years.
I think he was awful. We got a sample of him making a cold call. He wasn't good. He wasn't very affable. Wasn't very personable. I don't think he was good at that.
He was no Giovanni Ribisi. Let's just say that.
I think Marvin was better at that job than him.
Well, Marvin, I think, had been doing it longer too.
Not much longer. I think they're about the same age.
I don't think so. Maybe, but. Because they were already talking about he's only been out of school for like 2 years.
Yeah, I guess.
So.
I mean, even, okay, 1 year. Maybe at that time, 1 year's a lot of time.
Yeah, Marvin was better.
Marvin was better at it, though. You could tell he had a better, well, John C. McGinley has that thing. You know, he has a presence about him when he speaks. You know, I think people listen. So I think he was better at the job. And I think if Bud Fox doesn't go to Gordon Gekko, he fails and he's working at the Blue Star. The next year, he's working at Blue Star Airlines or whatever it is.
We'll never know because he didn't do that. And guess what? In part two, he comes out on top anyway.
Oh, yeah. He does. He does.
Time away.
Yeah. But the plot of this movie, it doesn't have like a, at first the plot you feel is the ascent of this guy into wealth. And then that changes, then it becomes changes to where it's now this guy is angry and he's trying to destroy another guy. Like, it goes through a couple variations. It's not like you could, like, if you ask me what's this movie about, I'd have to make an explanation.
The plot of this movie basically is Cobra Kai to me. Johnny versus Sensei Reese.
Well, okay, because they once were together and now they're...
And now you want to screw him over, try to right the wrong.
Yeah. But that's the difference, Johnny is in the right. Bud is not a good guy himself. He did all the shit that he's in trouble for. Yes.
Exactly. He's trying to right the wrong.
Yeah. Well, Johnny at least was manipulated into doing
Blue Star, he wasn't trying to screw them over. He wanted to turn the company around.
Yeah, he really did. He thought that was it. But it's breakable.
It is breakable and bankable.
You know, and when we think about what he was wanting to turn around, when he was in that meeting with James Spader, his friend.
Yeah.
And they go in there and he's sitting there. And once they start talking about how dude's going to make $70 million alone off the pensions or something like that, that's when he's like, oh, wait a second. My father's future's dead. Yep. He's not going to have any money.
Oops.
Yeah, but he did it. See, that's the thing. It was him who did it. So it's hard not to call him a bad guy. He's just as bad at that point to me as Gordon Gekko.
Yeah, I'm not like, but when you have a movie like that, yeah, you can obviously say he was a bad guy in it, but he was less bad than Gekko. So that's why you're rooting for him against Gekko.
Like I said, there's so many bad guys in this movie. Even James Spader's not a good guy. He's not a good guy. None of the people that work with
Gekko's are good. He got turned.
What?
he was till he got turned.
Oh, yeah. He got
minding his own business, you know, doing his lawyer shit, even though that doesn't make him a good guy either, obviously.
Yeah, we don't know. He might be doing some shit there.
No,
yeah.
We do know. Lawyers, no.
We saw Sex, Lies, and Videotape. He's not a good guy.
He's just not. He's just not. You know, Jesus, Steph. You're a piece of shit. You're always going to be a piece of shit. You were a piece of shit mannequin, for fuck's sake.
Yes, he's always a piece of shit, man. He's always. My gosh. But
he
no, he's
well.
He was minding his own business. There's no
well.
Good guys in this movie except for Bud's dad. That's all I'm saying. I'm still there.
Yeah, what does the good guy get out of it? A fucking heart attack.
And he drops his son off. But that's talk about the ending. So then he drops his son off at, looks like the courthouse down there. And he walks up, but we don't get a resolved ending to this. So you would think that because he delivered Gecko, he would have had reduced sentencing. But even then, if we remember Martha Stewart?
Well, hold on.
What?
I'm sure he did get leniency for doing that. But remember, he's not a big player. He's not Gecko. He doesn't have the money to buy himself out of anything.
That's what I was getting to. So we don't know there, but we know Gecko. He's like Martha Stewart, right? Martha Stewart got in trouble for insider trading.
Yeah.
And that's what she went away for a few months for.
She had to go stay at a fucking resort.
Yeah, we're talking like a place where she could probably golf and cook every day.
Right.
For prison.
Fucking gardening tips to inmates.
I'm surprised she didn't write a book. How to cook in very minimum security prison.
Maybe she did. I never
that's
looked.
That's true. That's so true. Hey, you have
chapter
you...
three, toilet wine. Toilet
chapter
rosé.
Toilet wine.
Toilet rosé.
Have you given any of your six packs or anything?
I gave my first one.
What was that?
Marvin. Marvin.
I'll go with more, man.
I actually also loved, which again, we already mentioned, the naked sexy French girl in the beginning of the movie that we never saw again.
Oui.
A travesty. But I did love the conversation, you know. You still seen that sexy French chick? She asked the wrong question. What'd she ask? What are you thinking?
That is a good a good one.
My other six pack actually, I love the showdown at Gordon's house with Sir Larry Wildman, who I refer to as Hans just because it seems appropriate. He's Hans.
Yeah. He's also he plays a good bad guy. He's not a good guy either, even though he ends up helping.
Right.
But he's still one of those guys.
Yeah, exactly. And he's only helping because he wants to fuck Gordon over.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's not like, he didn't come out and say, you know what, I see you've got a problem. Let me help you with that. I want to fuck this guy. Yeah. It's all about fucking the guy over.
Exactly.
You know he's done what Gordon was going to do many times over based on their conversations. So he's just as shitty as a guy. He's just a different flavor.
Yes.
It's just a different flavor.
This movie is Baskin Robbins of 31 different shitty people.
That's bad. I'm not saying the movie's bad though. I just want to throw that out there. It's a good movie.
It's a good movie. It's just that you literally don't give a flying fuck about what happens to any of these people.
Yeah. Yeah. You kind of don't. At the end, you're like, he's going off to the court and you're like, well, I'm hoping they all go to jail.
Right.
It's like
and I know it's an 80s movie and I get it's Wall Street and everything. I got a couple generics, but I think my main one that I got to throw out is the fucking smoking in this movie was overkill.
Oh, well, it is 80s.
I know it's 80s, but the fact that, and it was almost kind of like, to me, irresponsible too, because we have Martin Sheen having a heart attack and whole thing throughout, you know, why are you always smoking and all this?
But yeah.
Literally, I mean, when you've got, Michael Douglas, it's like, put one down, pick another one up. It's just like constant nonstop everywhere you go throughout the fucking movie. Everybody's fucking smoking a cigarette. It's like, and I know you don't watch Friends, but it's like Joey's fucking agent Estelle on Friends. Constant fucking chain smoker. Like,
yeah.
It's just like, it's just ridiculous at a point.
I agree. You know, it's funny you talk about that. I listened to another podcast where they talk about people who don't look cool trying to smoke in movies.
Yeah, there were several in there.
And I'd say in this one, they were okay. But like they say, Tom Cruise doesn't know how to hold a cigarette, but or Edward Norton.
It's just the non-stop every fucking scene, you know?
It doesn't age very well, does it? And like you said, what's worse is he has the heart attack, right? And he couldn't stop smoking. Then his son comes up to him to talk about the most stressful fucking situation in the world. Say, hey, Dad, you get better. I'm going to do this high maneuver, and this is what I'm going to do. Hope you're not going to stress out about it while I'm doing it.
Then after that, Charlie Sheen's fucking smoking everywhere.
Yeah. Well, that's that, you know, is the 80s. You got to smoke one to get better, you know? It's like,
Jesus Christ, fucking.
It's the hair of the dog. You need it.
The bottle, man. Jesus. Just time for some day drinking at work. Get the bottle out from your desk drawer.
Yeah. Oh, man. Is there anything we're missing on
here? Wouldn't it be fucking funny, though, if they remade this movie today?
Yeah.
Where everybody's walking around vaping.
Oh, shit.
Just nonstop.
That's what it would be. Yeah, it'd be Vape City. Vape City. Although, you know, ordinance now in cities like New York, you might not be able to do it in the building, even if you own it.
Be nonstop vaping throughout. And then Charlie Sheen and Daryl Hannah are cozying up in their apartment eating pot gummies after
I got a question for you. Speaking of Daryl, you just made me think of that. Her character, you know, she said Gordon brought her back. And they obviously slept together, you know, because they talked about after buying the art.
Right.
Might we go celebrate like we used to? Do you think she planned on sleeping with him again, even after she was with Bud?
I don't know, actually.
Because I kind of got the feeling like... I got the feeling Gordon was going to sleep with her, even though she's with Bud. I mean, we already tried.
I'm going to tell you, my thought process in this is... I'm wondering, before Charlie Sheen put a move on her, how recent it had been since Gordon had fucked her.
Had hit that?
I'm assuming it's probably not that long ago.
No.
I feel like this is she was more of a consistent side piece.
And Bud got in the way of that.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
That's my thoughts on it. That's just kind of in my head how I see that going. Can we also... throw some hella shade at that sex scene. That was bad.
I mean, all the scenes with Daryl Hannah were kind of rough.
In the dark, like, you know, you see Charlie Sheen, and it's a brief sex scene, but you see Charlie Sheen get up and do this like black swan pose or some shit. And they're like, what the fuck is going on here?
Maybe we don't know what we're doing, Anthony. Maybe there's something there that you don't know.
I don't know. I'm like, does he have the Kama Sutra as a coffee table book? And did they just peruse a couple pages before? Okay, let's try that tonight.
I'm going to do Red Lotus tonight.
Yeah. After I clean out the sushi machine, I'll meet you in bed.
And we're going to do some Red Lotus, some Black Swan.
Yeah, I'm going to try the tantric turnip tonight.
And they're yuppies, so you know they probably had a Joy of Sex book or some shit, like you said, Kama Sutra sitting right there. They had it all.
It was bad. It was just bad. I'm like, it was damn near like the Top Gun sex scene, like a spoof of it.
Yeah, I get you. Yeah. I'm surprised that when they did Hot Shots or something like that, they didn't do a spoof of that. But, you know.
You're right. They should have.
Because he was in that movie.
I'm just like, who fucking choreographed this scene?
Oliver Stone, obviously.
Like, I mean, there's, yeah.
I mean, maybe he has a weakness. We can call it that.
I just like, would you like sit down and watch 5 hours of MTV videos first and just decide, okay, this is what we're going to do.
It's going to look like a music video is happening.
Yeah. So, yeah, think Tawny Katane when she was on top of the car. Yeah, you want to put your leg like that.
Oh, man. So one of the fun parts about this movie, I guess, which people probably latch onto is the sudden wealth. Everybody loves rags to riches, right? And sudden wealth. And we all, it perpetuates the American dream, unfortunately, of that rags to riches story, which rarely happens. I think I've said it before. You know, they call it the American dream. This is a George Carlin quote. You know why they call it the American dream? because you have to be asleep to believe it. Anyways, so that's a George Carlin quote. He's good, isn't he? But if you were rags to riches right now and you are going to go build your super modern, hip, cool pad, bachelor pad, what would you put in it? What would you put in your hip bachelor super modern pad? No, this is that what I see behind you is pop culture stuff. But right. Would you have a latte maker? Would you have a Nespresso machine?
We're talking about. So are you talking about like appliances?
All kind of, any shit like a car elevator, because you're going to have multiple cars and you want an elevator that pulls your cars down below ground.
No, I would not be into all that crap.
You wouldn't have anything cool like that?
No.
You know, there's nothing you've eyeballed and said, man, if I had money and I could just, you know, buy whatever, I'd buy that thing, you know? Okay, whatever. I get maybe a 3D printer. I get all kinds of weird shit.
I do want to get a 3D printer, but more for our son to make stuff on.
There you go. But like, you know, one of those big ones where you can stand in it and it like takes a mapping of you and then it prints you out and has a little figurine.
You want your own action figure?
I want my own action figure, 3D printer to make action figures out of everybody that comes into my house. Yes.
Okay. I'd want to finish my arcade.
Well, yeah, there you go. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Those are the things we would do. I don't know if we'd be buying sushi makers and pasta
makers. No, my shit would be like more man cave stuff, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, that kind of shit. It's like, I'd want like, so what I would want that I don't have would be like a sports themed room with like a ticker on the wall. Like, you know, that kind of cool shit.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I see. So you have some splurge you would want to hit.
Well, yeah, not like a fucking elevator for a car garage or anything like that you're talking
about. An elevator in my house would be cool. Just an elevator.
Golf simulator. That would be cool.
That's actually doable for a lot less now.
Yeah, I know.
I told you before we started, I'm getting back into golf. And I was watching this video where the guy does a thing about the simulators. And there's one you could buy. And I know this sounds expensive, but it's not compared. It's like $700-$800. But you can either buy a projector and it'll project it on the screen, or you can just leave it on a tablet and just hit the ball and then look at the tablet to see where you went. Like, it'll show it on there. I was like, that does the job.
When the oldest finally moves out, that's what I got that room earmarked for.
A golf simulator?
See if I can make that happen.
If you make that happen, I'll live at your house.
No, I'm not going to make it happen then.
I will live there. I can work from, remember, I work from home now. Most of the time.
I know, Dupree. I know.
So if I want to right now, I could come to your house and work and live with you.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
We have things called locks on the door.
You wouldn't do that to me. I'm family. You don't do that to family.
You bullshit, I wouldn't.
I wouldn't do that to you.
I don't
care. No matter how angry I was.
We're not talking about what you would do. We're talking about me.
Well, you need to understand that what you should do for me is what I would do unto others as you would want done to you. So if you do that to me, you expect that of yourself.
Yes, exactly. And I am totally fine with you locking me out of your house. I've made peace with that. I'm good.
I would never lock you out of my house.
But you can. I give you full permission.
You'd have to do something so outrageous that would have to do that. But could you
give me some fucking hints or ideas about what that would be so I can at least make a list?
Well, I don't know if you want to make this list. It's pretty bad.
Okay.
It's pretty bad. Okay, so I think we're at the point where we need to ask the question that you love to ask.
Oh, that question.
You know what it is? I mean, gosh, Jack, like he's never done this before.
I do.
All right.
What
do you want from it? What piece of paraphernalia souvenir thing do you want other than the French chick?
The
from
French
the
chick count since she didn't talk.
Yes. She's just an object in the movie.
She didn't have a line in the movie, so she isn't credited in it. So that wouldn't that count as a prop?
I guess she's a breathing prop, but yeah, sure.
No. So seriously, it's funny because this is a movie with there's so much shit in it that you actually, in fact, do not want.
Yes.
All of the artwork, like all of this, it's like this shit is so fucking hideous. This is your 80s yuppie fucking decorative, like anal wart right here. That's what it is. It's. Kind of this one's tough. I would say one thing just that sticks out to me that I think that I guess that would be cool is the Zach Morris phone that
yes
Michael Douglas had on the beach.
That is excellent. That is an excellent choice.
It is, even though it's not like,
you could probably find that actually.
Right. But it's not like an instrumental, or it's not like the Hoverboard Back to the Future where it's a focal
point. Yeah.
Or anything. Cause usually that's kind of cool stuff you want to pick out for a souvenir or something you get out from the movie. Yeah. So I think that's what I have to go with. Cause it's like a lot of stuff in this movie is so fucking ugly.
I'm going to say, you know, that I kind of am in the place where I want two things. I might want a piece of that crown molding with the weird foil design on it. You know, that she was doing the gold leaf on.
You don't want the painting?
The painting. Yes. Or the painting. I think one of the paintings,
you know what,
would be nice.
What about the pasta maker?
Well, that's actually
functional.
It is functional, but I wouldn't want to use it. So I want something more visual.
Rice pooper. Gives you perfect rice turds every time.
Or his dad's Blue Star Steel jacket. That'd be nice too.
That actually would be cool. That would be cool. Or the or Charlie Sheen's maintenance shirt.
Yeah.
Break into the law. Oh,
yeah. Because he bought a freaking, he basically became a silent partner on a company. Yeah.
That's how you do it right there.
Yeah, he's a smart guy. He figured out how to, but that's what made him a bad guy, right?
I will tell you, the other thing I would go with, which would be cool. So the whole Saving Silverman. Where they had the jacket on display in the stand.
Yeah.
Do that with Gordon Gekko's suit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, his suit.
That'd be pretty sweet.
His suit. Yeah, you know what? I think that's it right there. That's the item. And because Michael Douglas was wonderful in this movie. So he makes this movie. He even makes the sequel. So
yes.
Was it Shia LaBeouf?
Fuck no, it wasn't.
So there we go. All right. Are you ready to rank this bitch up?
Let's rank this.
Rate it.
Pan it. Let's put some carbonation in the shit.
All right. Me or you?
You go first.
All right. I'll go first. Okay. So I watched this again, of course, for this podcast. I went and watched it. And like I said before, when I was young and I watched it, I had a different feeling watching it. I think I watched it to see what kind of cool shit there was in it. And I saw a sushi maker and a pasta maker. And I saw a guy make a lot of money. And then I didn't understand really what was happening later on. Whatever. I guess that ending sucked. That's what I thought back then. But now I watch, it's a different feeling. It aged well with the topic, with all of the greedy people in this world. And when they talk, and here's something we didn't talk about. I forgot. At one point, he says the top 1% own 50% of the nation's wealth. If you remember, that was in 1988.
Yep.
I think now it's even further tilted to where it's like 80%.
Yep.
They own 80%. So when you hear that number, and that was supposed to be sickening and ridiculous, it's worse now. That's how this movie ages so well, because it showed where it was going then and it's gotten there. And for that, I got to say, that's what makes it brilliant. The things I got to knock it for are its 80s cocaine yuppie culture shit. While I love the sushi maker, I don't like Daryl Hannah's performance. It's kind of flat. I don't like that apartment, how she decorated. That's the biggest detractor in this movie for me.
At the time.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Even at that time, that looks stupid to me. So it's like, you think of when I was 14, I was looking at that going, man, I wish I had a weird ass looking apartment.
No, you probably were, because you're probably like, that's what rich people have. That's cool. I want that.
No, I wasn't like that at all. But that's my detractor. So when I think of where I put this, this is not what I would say the top of the top, but it's getting pretty good. I'm going to say 18 and a half.
Okay. So I will say this is an enjoyable movie for sure. But it does have its issues, which we've discussed several of them. Some of the performances, I mean, again, Michael Douglas, that's the meat and potatoes of the movie for sure. I think one of the things that I personally don't care for as much in here is it's not overly complicated, but I don't think it's dumbed down enough as far as the actual stock market aspect in areas. Whereas like you give me like a movie like Boiler Room, which is funny since they do have the scene where they're actually watching Wall Street and quoting it. doesn't
know Vin Diesel joint there.
Livestock. And Affleck. So
Ribisi.
Mia Long. There we go. Secretary making $80,000 a year. Shit. So I think when you do go down this road and make one of these types of movies, like one of the things to me that I don't like as much about it is when you're like kind of figuring out what they're doing with the stocks, and when it gets into that shit, I think you spend time then thinking about that and trying to figure out what they're doing in some instances where you're kind of missing part of what's going on at times.
Yeah.
So that's where, like, to me, again, you give me something like Boiler Room where it doesn't do that as much, and you can, you know, you see it, but then you can kind of forget about it and kind of watch the rest of the movie. So that I ding it for too. And just overall, it's a good movie. It's not a great movie to me. I give it a 16.
Okay.
So
I get that.
Like I said, right. Good. I'd watch it again. I like it. It's just not like an all-time favorite or anything. And again, Charlie Sheen, which I love him in so many movies, not one of his best ones to me. He's a good, he would have done it. I mean, like, even like when you see his cameo in the second one, like much better than,
yeah.
You know, which again, I mean, he's older, you know, his acting is, you know,
has his tiger blood.
Proved, got the tiger blood, exactly. Tiger blood, more cocaine, more hookers, all of that stuff made him a better actor, apparently.
Yes, it did. Where's this put this on here?
We are at 17.25. Let me ask you real quick, though. Do you think how do you think this movie would have worked if they had switched the roles and James Spader played his role and Charlie Sheen was the lawyer?
I'd like it better.
Think so? I kind of wonder about that.
Because James Spader has that bad guy thing. And it really is a bad guy part that, you know, that he plays. So I think it would be interesting to see.
Would have been interesting, for sure.
I like James Spader.
Fucking Emilio. How do you think he would have done in it?
Not as good. I don't think this is an Emilio movie.
I'm just kidding.
Judd Nelson. Let's go with the whole Brad Pitt.
Nelson would have fucking wrecked that shit.
Judd
Nelson in that? Hell yeah. All day.
What was that movie he did, the law one, where he had to get the guy off for murder?
From the Hip?
From the Hip, yeah. That if you watch that could have been such a great movie. But there were some problems.
The Dildo. That's a good movie. I still like it.
It is a great movie. As I was saying, when you watch that, that's what you get. But I don't think this character was funny enough for Judd Nelson.
So. I will tell you that. Like I will definitely say I think Judd Nelson would have been a much better choice for that role in Wall Street. For sure. I really do.
At the time, not later.
Yeah, not later. Yeah. But so let's see. We're 17.25. We got Dirty Dancing at 17.5. There you go. Encino Man, 17.25. Mostly thanks to me. See if we got any like more serious movies anywhere.
Encino Man.
We don't do a lot of serious movies.
We don't.
Rounders is 19.
But that's brilliant compared to this. I mean, I think Rounders is a way better movie.
You do?
Than this? Yes. Didn't I give it higher?
You gave the same fucking score.
Oh, well, there you go. That's fucking hilarious.
I don't think we've really done anything that we can compare to this, though. I mean, I'm looking at scores, but I'm just like, Scent of a Woman, 17.25.
I gave that a high score.
You gave it 18.5.
Yeah. It's a good movie.
So.
But not a home run. Not like out of the park.
You've Got Mail, 17.25.
It's a good movie. I give that like, what did I give that? 18?
16.5. I gave it 18.
You gave it 18. Yeah. So yeah, it's a good movie, but it's not like, it's not an Oscar worthy performance like Wall Street or anything.
Wall Street only had one Oscar worthy performance, and that was Michael Douglas.
And director. Yeah. So.
You know what? I'm not going to say, oh, great directing job after I saw that fucking sex scene. That was horrid.
See, he knocked some points off for that. That's why it went down.
What you did, Mr. Director. You gave me a horrible sex scene where they're doing all these weird fucking poses. It was like Romeo and Michelle doing that dance at the end of the movie. And then you give me a hot naked French chick at the beginning and never show her again. You call that directing? I'll show you some fucking directing.
I'm going to direct you to the exit.
Exactly. So like, no, pan the camera that way. She's walking out. Keep going that way.
So really, we don't have a lot of serious movies serious-ish. That we've done.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard. I get it. No, that's cool, man. Yeah. That's cool. That's cool. That's cool. So
we're just not serious people.
So that's it then. Okay. So just want to say we'd like to thank you for listening. Like I said, you know how to hit us up, how to tell us what to do, because we like to being told what to do, all that stuff. And don't forget to follow our Instagram, because I think that's the best way to get a hold of us and message us. That's what I would do. Is there anything else?
That's it. Thank you guys for listening. Stay greedy.